It's Thursday, February 16th, 2017, and you're listening to episode 432 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 45 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Julia.
My name is Pat.
My name's Chad.
And my name is Chris.
It's so great having Julia, Pat, and Chris on the mic. Like, Chad and I have not talked over those three hosts months.
Yeah, I know. You guys, we'd hate for you to get out of practice, so.
Yeah.
And I'm much more chatty now, so this could be interesting.
Yeah, so Pat normally is incredibly quiet, right? Unless we're talking about pornography or something.
Then he's always going to be.
Right. Or you get him angry.
Yeah, or we get him angry. Like, he gets worked up about the sugar daddies. About pornography. Yes. Or the sugar daddies at the strip club.
Yes.
And it's better if you catch him on his own, right? Like, away from the mics, he actually talks more. But ever since you've been getting the cancer treatments, I don't know if they have you on, like, opioids or what you're on.
It is. I'm on opioids, and it's the opioids that do it, apparently.
Because
they make you more chatty.
Yeah, you go into these, like, mania states.
I do.
Where I can't stop you.
Yeah, it's really weird, because I've never been this talkative. I mean, just even in normal, just away from the mics, I don't talk that much anyway. But, yeah, I'm just very chatty now. It's crazy.
So I got two thank yous to give, because two people sent me housewarming gifts. At least I assume they're housewarming gifts. I think one of them specifically said so.
Was one like a new riding saddle, and the other one was a gift basket for your staff?
No.
We don't give the staff.
I don't know where the
gifts.
Riding saddle comes from, but I like it.
It came from a joke we were making last
week
about Brodor thinks I have stables out back.
Oh, okay.
But like actual stables, not something sexual. I realize
you don't.
Pat, horses also use saddles.
I've heard
they're
that,
not
but
just
I don't.
For
I,
sex.
I, it's. Well, I, I've not.
Horses
seen
are kinky too.
Yeah.
They're all hung like a horse, so why wouldn't they be?
So the first one is, and you're gonna have to excuse me here if I butcher the last name, if I'm just guessing, but John Eli or maybe John Ellie, but I'm gonna guess Eli sent me a copy of the advanced play version of Pugmire, which is the game by Eddie Webb. So if anyone who doesn't know who Eddie Webb is, he used to work for White Wolf, now writes for, I believe, Onyx Path as well on World of Darkness stuff. And he's creating his own role-playing game called Pugmire, which is based on his fascination with pugs. And by the way, I think really the throwdown I want to watch is a civil war that is limited to only two parties. And that's pug fanatics and corgi fanatics. I want to watch that war.
I'm on the corgi side.
But
I have to go corgi myself.
Well,
I would also go corgi.
That's saying you don't care that much.
Right.
They do.
Oh, yes.
Sure.
They do so much. Like, people of any other dog breed do not care about the breed of their dog. They might love their dog a whole lot, but they are not as fixated as militantly on their dog breed as pug owners and corgi owners. So
I don't know. Have you ever said a bad word about pit bulls?
Well, that's the thing. Pit bulls, they only get defensive.
Right.
They're not
they
like fanatic.
Like,
they play with kids. They love kids.
Yeah.
If you say, like, a pug may have bitten somebody once somewhere in history, not a pug, a pit bull, then these people lose their minds. But it's always on the defensive, right? Yeah. They're not out there like, oh,
promoting
I need pit bull this and pit bull that. And
they don't have the pit bull political action committee out there advocating for rights.
I'm going to start a little bit of shit.
Yeah.
Okay. Pugs were literally bred to sit on your feet and be lazy. That's what pugs were actually bred for, was to keep people's feet warm. And they're huge, fat. Well, they're not huge. They're fat, lazy dogs for a reason.
Okay.
They're bred that way.
So that's gift number one.
Anyway.
Now, for anyone who's not familiar with that specific game, I will link to it in the show notes. But the gist of it is the game takes place after some kind of apocalypse on Earth. And dogs have, I don't know if it's they've evolved or if it's magic or whatever, but dogs have become intelligent and humanoid. And all they know is that once upon a time, they were the servants of some much greater golden age race called man. And so they serve man, and they have like 10 commandments from man. And like the first one is be a good dog. Oh. And it just goes down from there. And then you have like the kingdom of Mao, where you can play cats and all. It's just, it's a silly game, but it's a fun game.
No, it's a deadly serious game.
well, freaking kill people That's over right. this game. The second one has inspired me to do something.
Uh-oh.
This one, never good. This yeah. one came from Chris Ings. He sent us an autographed by Kevin Symbieta copy of the Rifts coloring book.
Wow.
So I have determined, since my house already has dogs, and now we have a coloring book, horrifying as it is, that I'm going to get some crayons, and we are going to set up a Fear of the Boot safe space. Mm. And at some future episode, we are going to have a Fear of the Boot safe space rotation, where I'm going to put the dog of your choice in there, this coloring book, and like some nice new age music or rainforest sounds. And I want you have to color
a picture.
This
is like the anti-Chad space. It's a room with dogs, riffs, and new age music. Why in the hell would I ever go in there?
To get you in the mood for the horror of riffs. Because I have to either sedate you to the point you can handle riffs, mm-hmm. or drive you so mad, it's like Pac-Man. You go off one side of the board and come back on the other.
Come back full riffs.
Yeah. You have to go through X number of trials.
Can you just sedate me? That's kind of my preference.
You're a big journey. You're a big Journey to the West fan, right?
I love it.
So, okay, you know, at the end of the story, mm-hmm. he is forced to go through one more trial, mm-hmm. because he has not suffered the right number of times to ascend and to come back with the Buddhist scriptures. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what this is like. But each of us is going to pick a page and color it, and then we're going to come in and talk about the story that we put behind that page and talk about the color choices. So there's going to be a real artistic storytelling.
Stop looking at me when you say this.
Expressive element to it. Like,
this is the worst idea you've ever
Like, I just want you guys to know that there is a picture in here of
a horse with nose guns.
Yes, of a robotic horse.
Come on now.
Machine gun barrels that come out of its nostrils. And it's firing shell casings from its cheeks. Arrow
in
it.
That must be in the basic tier of things.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Well, is there any nudity?
No.
Damn it.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's naked. It just doesn't have any genitals.
Actually, and here's kind of a dog man over here. Guess who that's going to become? Uh-huh. So we're going to get a story about Gnarl in there.
That's right.
Chris, go ahead and say something. I know, like, it's so hard with the rotation, because we don't see you sitting up like you're either about to say something or have a heart attack.
I am not having a heart attack, and I am sitting up. So,
well, we do have his picture on the screen, and his picture is Hawkman from Flash Gordon.
From Flash Gordon.
From the movie Flash Gordon. And what was his name? What was
that? It's Prince Volton the character. Okay. And then Brian Blessed, of course, is the actor.
I know he was the leader of the Hawkmen, but I could not remember what his name was, because it's been ages since I've seen that movie.
That movie is easily one of my favorite movies of all time. I absolutely love that movie, and I love it because it's so cheesy.
My favorite part of the movie is when Ming the Merciless dies, and then his eye, he's on that rotating board that has the spikes that come out of it, as when one side's down, you know, whatever.
Oh,
and he gets
impaled
on it, and then his eye, like, oozes out of its socket, and, like, it's, like, foam coming out of his eye.
I went and saw that in the movie theater with a little friend, and I remember that scene specifically, and that was actually Main Enforcer, so it wasn't Ming.
Ming died in the end,
he gets impaled by Flash.
That one scene has stuck with me since childhood. Yes, like, he dies, and the eye oozes out, like, foam oozing out of the socket. It's like,
the tongue and everything comes out. It was that moment that was the catalyst to get everyone to rebel against Ming at that point.
Julie and I are sitting here like, ew.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, it was.
Like that movie, I probably was 5 when that movie came out or something.
Yeah. For cinema in 1980, that was definitely a gross moment.
If it was 1980, I would have been 6 years old. So yeah, I saw it in the theater.
It was a huge movie scene that creeped me out for a long time. Okay.
I'm going to tell you anyway.
So okay. mean.
I know, right?
Was in The Last Starfighter.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember the beta?
No.
Okay,
yes. So I'm too young for
that. The plot of The Last Starfighter is that
it's a great movie.
Yeah,
but it was entertaining and fun.
The Last Starfighter, the plot is that there's an arcade that's basically a training game, or sort of like a screening thing, because there is some kind of like good guy space empire that needs to get pilots. And so what they've done is they've scattered these in various forms all throughout like the sapient races of the galaxy.
Define the one best pilot per race.
Right.
Exactly. Not like the 500 best pilots. Yeah. Right. One
Which
per race.
I'm sure there was some thin plot reason for this.
Yeah.
But there's this kid who lives in like some, I don't know, crappy little subdivision or something. And there's an arcade of it outside of the, I think it's a laundry room. And he plays it and like gets this outstanding high score. And so they abduct him and they conscript him.
One guy.
Yeah, they conscript him into piloting a fighter in this war.
Yep.
Which is a horrible message to send everybody. But they have to try for some reason, even though like the galaxy hangs in the balance, they decide to keep up appearances. And so they want to replace him. And so they put this like alien doppelganger in his place. But like it has to slowly take on his form. And so what happens is when it first arrives, it's just kind of like this blank humanoid template. And over time, it metamorphs into him. But there's this one scene where this beta, as they call it, is hiding under the blankets of the guy's bed.
Yeah.
And his little brother's trying to talk to him. And when the little brother walks out of the room, he pulls the beta, pulls back the blankets, and you see the beta in its middle form.
Yeah.
And as an adult, looking back on it, it's not that bad. But as a kid, it was like
freaky,
so graphic and so scary that I watched that movie I don't know how many times, and every time that scene came up, I had to close my eyes or bury my head in the seat.
You know,
I'm
with you, Dan. There are certain things like that that are just, as a kid, you know, that
the Wrathicon,
you just
earworms.
Oh, my
gosh.
Yeah, you just hit a big one. That, to this day, I still, when I watch it, it just makes me cringe.
About half of The Dark Crystal.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, I love The Dark Crystal.
Oh, it's a great movie. I love it. Fantastic, but oh,
I
my
saw
gosh.
It in the theater, man. That was great.
I'm with Chad. The Dark Crystal, absolutely loved that movie.
Me
and
too.
There wasn't anything that necessarily creeped me out. It was more of just this, had this whole just weird fantasy vibe to it. But yet, there was, you just picked up the sense that there was all this stuff going on in the background that the movie didn't even want to touch upon because it didn't have the time.
The theme of, well, I don't know the theme of
good versus evil and it being a balance.
I don't want to get I don't want to get too deep was about because I was a little kid and it's like what I felt about Dark Crystal was that it was a world that was disintegrating and that there was this fight for the fight's sake because everything was sort of disintegrating, falling apart. I mean, I probably got that totally wrong when I was a kid, but that's what I felt. Now, the movie that freaked me out as a little kid was Time Bandits.
Nope.
Really?
And the reason why, and it's a great movie.
Oh,
it's a lot of
love
fun.
It.
Well, okay, it's not a great movie. It's a lot of fun movie. For a little kid, it had this sense of corruption about it. You know, because that was there was this great evil that was everything that it got near, it corrupted and turned evil. And there was something about that concept that really freaked me out as a kid because it's unstoppable. I mean, if there's a werewolf, you can run away from the werewolf or you can punch it or an adult could come and stop it. But just this corrupting presence that the Time Bandits could only run away from.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that concept just really, really freaked me out as a kid.
I had the big monster stuff. Like, I had Aliens and Jurassic Park that I grew up with. So those were the things.
Jurassic Park?
Oh, my gosh. I was...
How
what
old
are you laughing
are
at?
You?
I'm 30. So, like, shut up.
She's a cute baby. I was like, didn't I drive to the theater?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, but my point is, like,
I
had, like, the big monsters that used to scare me, but I got over them really quick. I feel like, like you said, a monster is easy to get over, but the never-ending story had...
The nothing.
That was a little freaky.
We just watched that the other day, too. I've been on a movie kick. I've watched so many movies, and that was another one. Yeah. It was on. We watched Neverending Story.
I haven't seen that in years.
And I will say this. It's one of those that's...
It's the unknowableness of it.
Yeah.
Like a werewolf, I can look at a werewolf. It's like big claws, fangs, danger, I get it.
Speaking of which, have you seen... Okay, so there's that thing Coke's been doing or was doing at least recently where there was a name on it, say, share a Coke with, a name. Mm-hmm. So then there was these memes where people would put, you know, share a Coke with, they'd find the name, and then they'd find, like, you know, a picture of a character from a movie or something to just happen to share that name. But there was one where somebody put up a picture of the princess from the Neverending Story crying, and it just says share a Coke with, and then it's blank.
That's horrible. So here's the thing I have to say about this, because it's not really a meme, but one of the big things from Neverending Story is that people are always so sad about when the horse dies in the Swamp of Sorrows. I watched that scene and I'm like, I was expecting to have this big emotional response to it. And I'm just like, this is just horrible. I'm like, what the f*** is the horse so upset about? And he's like, be happy. I'm like, what the fuck? It's a horse. Why is he sad? I didn't understand why the horse was so fucking sad that it sunk in the swamp. So it didn't have the sad. It just didn't have that effect on me. And it was so quick. It was just like, boom, gone. I'm like,
well, no, that's why it was
sinking. I was mad about it. I'm like, this is a stupid horse.
That's why it was sinking, is the horse is sinking because it's like a swamp of despair.
Right.
So if you despair, you sink.
Yeah,
so
I know. The point, so you have to be, happy.
Right.
He was trying to save his horse.
My whole thing about it, too, is like, so the horse sinks. And then Artax is gone. Well, that's pretty fucking bad. You know, and the hero, he's all upset about it. Why the fuck isn't he sinking? He just walks out of the fucking swamp.
Maybe he's a psychopath.
I think so. Because like he's like devastated. No, you can't leave me. Come on, Artax. I'm like, why is he not sinking at the moment?
Maybe he's
despairing about
it. Maybe that's like the performance he's putting on for the audience. But actually what you don't see is he's got a bit of a semi.
Yeah, I think so.
Sure. He's a mass murderer.
I'm going to get rid of this.
Like, he had loose breeches, he's so it's certainly possible.
Yeah. He was like playing out Equus in his head.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
getting ready to gouge his
eyes. I really
out.
Think it's just a horrible plot hole because that movie's full of them.
Yeah, it really is.
No, it's like a flying German Shepherd thing.
It's a horrible plot hole.
The Luck Dragon. Yes, the Luck Dragon.
That's which,
flying
Atreyu.
Golden Doodle or something.
I don't know.
All right, Pat. I thought that dragon was stupid when I was a kid.
I didn't.
And it's not even a dragon. It's a dragon, but it's a dog dragon.
I'm like a dog. Yeah. Dragon.
A dragon dog.
What about a cat bus? Like, anyway, go ahead.
Cat bus is amazing.
So, Pat, while you're here, I have to ask you one question. Then we're going to get to some kind of gaming topic, which is, so the female Gelfling in Dark Crystal.
Oh.
Uncanny Valley hot or just Uncanny Valley?
Warm, velvety Muppet sex?
Warm, yes.
No, she's more like sculpted.
Hey, you know what? Pull up a picture real quick because it's been long enough. I know who you're talking. Mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about, but like I can't picture it in my mind because I haven't seen it in years.
It's hard to. I would think it would be hard to judge because it's literally the same thing as the male Gelfling. They just put hair on it.
Yeah,
gross.
I mean, it's
gross.
Yeah, it's for me. Yeah, no, it's just yeah.
I'd much rather have Fizzgig. Sorry.
I am Fizzgig. What do you think Gizmo is?
Do you know there's an entire generation of people listening to this?
They have no idea what we're talking about.
No.
Well, you should watch Dark Crystal. You'll get a lot of really good gaming
That's true.
Characters out there.
Absolutely.
So, all right, let's roll into it. Julia, you have something with your current game. Go.
I am getting frustrated at people stepping on other people's toes. And my example is this. I generally play a rogue or some sort of roguey type, and I think it's mainly because
Or a pirate.
But mainly my gaming group tends to go either caster or the other spectrum, like a barbarian or something. So I like playing the middle ground. And this particular Pathfinder game, I chose a slayer, which is kind of a mix of a ranger and a rogue. And why the barbarian thinks sneaking is his job really pisses me off, and it's starting to wear on
a
me. Because
barbarian? Really?
Right, okay, so like we're...
What edition?
Pathfinder.
Okay.
So there's another ranger, which is fine. We're a big enough group.
I've got to assume... that a cross class for the barbarian? Or is it not?
Well,
skill wise, I
cross class skill, stealth.
Yeah.
But that's the point. That's my point, is that she has no stealth.
Okay.
But we're going to go recon this castle, and she is coming with the rest of the party who also doesn't have stealth, with the two people of the highest stealth, and blow it. And it's like, you just ruin the game for us rogues. It's like the one thing we can do amazingly, and you're rolling for it. It like drives me up a wall, and I've been dealing with this for years with my gaming group, and I'm just at my wit's end. I finally looked at everybody, and I said, no, you are not. You do not roll those dice. Like, I was like super pissed. I just had the baby, so I was extra crabby. So they just got like full-blown bitch Julie about rolling stealth finally. And I'm just stepping on toes. You're a barbarian. You sit there and you hit shit after I've snuck attack them. Like, that's it. Anyway, that's
what you're saying is you just want to keep people in their little boxes and you don't want them to try and get out of their comfort zone. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, because if it was like, okay, if it was a caster that was like not a half-orc and wanted to roll stealth and actually had something, that's fine. You are a giant half-orc woman. Mm-hmm. You sit in the corner.
Yeah, and you're wearing, jangly armor.
And you think about the choices that brought you here.
Yeah, like, I'm fine with a little bit of cross-classing, but like the end, one end of the one end of the spectrum and the other end of the spectrum shouldn't be trying that middle ground.
Yeah,
like that's my, I guess that's my.
All right, let's break this into two issues. Issue one is everybody wants their moment to shine.
Right.
And that may come from role-playing, that may come from skills. Everyone's going to, we all get something different out of a role-playing game. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's very fair to say that for some people, they are going to create a particular kind of character and expect to be able to use that character's abilities, right? To mean something, to shine, okay? Other people, like Chad, for example, you may care less about the abilities and more about what having the RP spotlight, yeah. For example. But I think nonetheless, Julie's point there is fair. But then the second issue is when somebody's character, whether through in-character choices or just out-of-character bullheadedness or antsiness or whatever is motivating this player, insists on doing an action that they are not good at, but someone else in the party is good at.
Right.
And sometimes that's funny. Like when you get the brainless troll in Shadowrun trying to negotiate complex financial deals, and you get some, right, it's funny, it's comedy, it's a but good part of the RP.
Especially because, yeah, role-playing makes
exactly.
that good.
But there's other times where it's not contributing anything to the game. The person's just screwing it up for the entire group.
Well, even if it's not contributing, like, say the group doesn't care about, like, the more mechanical stuff of it.
Yeah.
Like you said, hey, yeah, that was funny. Once,
right?
Twice,
it seems to be every time.
It's like, yeah, where it's constantly.
My group's
like,
bad about it.
Yeah,
it's all the time.
Yeah,
and it's like I understand, but I personally, when I play Pathfinder, like other game systems, I tend to role play more. But Pathfinder, I'm more crunchy numbers for some reason. Just for that, I don't know why, but I really want to use my character for what they're used for, and I'm a very strategic player. Mm-hmm. And so my strategy is, I'm a ranger / rogue. I should go and map things out, you know, maybe kill
disarm
guards
the
if they're
traps,
101, do those things.
Recon,
yeah. And so when you come running through with your orc ass, like it's not, you're not
big
helping
orc
me.
Booty.
Right? The big orc booty.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just feel like that's something that I feel like needs to be talked about because I know it's happened amongst other people too.
So, and you're talking, this is in your established group. So this is not a case of it's a new role player.
Nope.
This is somebody that's been role-playing for
years.
Well,
and everybody does it. The orc is just an example.
Yeah.
She happens to be playing with us, but all of them do it.
Every.
Oh, my wow. my huh. brother. My brother. My own brother.
Well, you should bitch slap him. I mean, that's easy. Just, you know.
Yeah.
Shove him down the stairs.
Yeah.
Blame the baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Press so, yeah.
Four. My question, is this something that has to do more with the fact of, is this a player hogging the spotlight? Is this a player not understanding the kind of the purpose and dynamic of the group
is a little bit of both.
I mean, if this has been happening for years, it would seem like this would be something that you guys would all have moved beyond.
Well, I think we've got a couple different factors here. We tend to have min-maxers, so to combat that, some of us have gotten to the point where we'll just try anything just so that we can do something. And I think that's part of it, but we haven't had those min-maxers playing with us in a while. So I feel like that, yeah, we should have moved past that, first of all.
And so it's like a monkey wrenching thing where it's like somebody's going to min-max, so they've got a plus 25 to stealth. So to get them to knock it off, I'm going to do the passive-aggressive thing and have like a plus 2 to stealth, but
well,
keep doing it.
No, I think it's more like inclusion, because if they didn't at least try it, then they wouldn't be able to do anything because the min-maxers could do everything.
I gotcha. They've covered all the bases. So
right.
Okay. There's literally nothing you can trigger.
Right. It's nothing malicious or like snarky or anything.
I get that. Believe me, I've had GMs do it to me both intentionally and unintentionally where I literally don't know why my character is there. There is nothing role-playing wise, power-wise,
right.
anything-wise that is involved in the
toddling
game.
Toddling along.
Yeah, exactly. I just...
And I also think that with my gaming group, it's a case of inclusion. Everybody likes to, like, work together and, like, which is so, like, hippie sounding. But, like, you know, everybody wants to be a part of it and, like, hang out and do things.
Well, do you think, let me ask you a question here. Do you think maybe the issue here is wrong game? And the reason that I'm asking that is because it sounds like the desires that your group has, which is to have a role, to have purpose, to always be some part of the action. There's no game that I think is going to perfectly handle this, but it seems like as role-oriented as most class-based games are, D&D included, that D&D is going to magnify this problem. I know it's Pathfinder, but you get my point.
Yeah.
Whereas, let's take a game, for example, like good old Battletech, you know, where you can have somebody who's playing long-range support, and somebody who's playing close and brawling, and somebody who's doing field demolitions, and you are all doing your own thing, but you're doing them at the same time. Or you could take a game like Star Trek where, hey, an unknown alien ship appears, and there's something there for the science officer to think about. There's something there for whoever's manning weapons to think about. There's something there for whoever's playing the captain to think about. It's there's an obvious way that the entire party can be involved. I mean, maybe not perfectly simultaneously, but it's a whole lot less red light, green light, or if you're colorblind, gray light, than what you would get out of something like D&D or Pathfinder.
You might be right. I mean, we tried Warhammer. Yay. sorry.
Wow. The enthusiasm on that was just seeping.
Yes.
That was the one where I was like, I have been pregnant and alone. Let's play a game. And everybody's like, let's play Warhammer. And I'm like, okay. We came off Warhammer, which was tough because most people don't know. So the GM is like really into it. So he knows like everything about it.
Yeah.
And then us players, we like knew nothing about it. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to stick to our roles really well because we didn't understand the game. And I think that's part of the maybe the culprit is that Pathfinder is so familiar to everybody. Yeah, like, because we have a couple new ones that it's not brand, they're not brand new, but they're new to gaming, sort of. Like, they haven't played many different systems. They've only played, like, Pathfinder and Warhammer now.
I realize this is going to get mixed comments, but I don't think Pathfinder is a good first game.
Oh, well, I don't think Warhammer was, which was one of them's first, but, you know.
I think fantasy stripped down. Okay, so stripped down fantasy, I think, makes a great first game. Because of the fact that most people are familiar with fantasy tropes. If they've seen Lord of the Rings, if they've ever heard a fairy tale, they get the gist of elves, dwarves, orcs, dragons, whatever. But Pathfinder, it's a complicated game.
Yeah,
it's not the crunchiest game I've seen, but there's a lot.
No advanced squad leader, but.
No, yeah. But it's not one of those task force games or something. But there's a lot to it.
Yeah, there is.
It's. As opposed to something.
And there's also an implied saying. I mean, you say, oh, yeah, well, everyone knows orcs and dragons and elves and stuff. It's like, yeah, that stuff's in there, and you can get that. There is also a sort of implied setting and implied vibe to the game, to D&D in general, to Pathfinder, because it's from that. So, yeah, I kind of agree with you. I don't think it's a good first game either. What would be a good first game, though? Well, although we're kind of strange.
I said Fate. Any Fate system would be good. It would get you into the role-playing side of things.
Maybe. I worry that Fate goes the opposite direction. It's so stripped down, it's so open, that I don't think it's clear, to use Chad's, one of his favorite metaphors, it's not clear what buttons there are to push.
Right.
Because it's so vague. It's so descriptive. Even I, as a role player of, you know, decades, the first Fate game I played, the idea of write down these adjectives or phrases that hit this sweet spot of being meaningful without being overly specific.
Well,
and they can be used for me and against me. Really confusing idea.
And yet there's a lot of, you can get really deep in the weeds and the rules too. I mean,
that's true.
There is a lot of crunch. I mean, hell, Pat and I we've been playing Dresden for 2 or 3 years, not off and on. And I was like 2 games ago, Pat wanted to do something that was pretty complex and in-depth, and I had made a new character who was a magic user. And so I read the entire magic section, which is like a large part of the book, and I learned, it's like, oh, I've been playing this game for 2 years. Now I understand how to play it.
Yeah.
And I had to walk Pat through, okay, this is how you tag a scene and get this for free to get this point. Now you spend a fate chip to tag this to get this. Now you tell Wayne, I am doing this. I would like this to happen, and then you get another, you know, and basically you stack it up to where you can actually make the legendary difficult roles.
Yeah.
I've been playing for years, and Pat's a rules guy.
I don't have a problem with D&D in general.
Right.
I'm just not sure I'd go Pathfinder. I think that if I was to pick a D&D edition, I think, for example, something like 5th, where you can roll a lot of that back, and you can even just ask them to make choices like, okay, your background. Pick from one of these half dozen or dozen backgrounds. you know, your class specialty. Pick from always half a dozen or dozen class specialties.
What about fourth edition?
No.
As an intro.
Well, yeah, okay.
Well,
I would argue that you could do it because I sat down, I never played fourth, though I certainly obviously have played plenty of other editions, but I sat down at a FLGS one day when fourth edition was relatively recently out, and I was able to pick it up fairly easily as regards to, oh, so here's what I can do. Here's something special I can only do once or twice. Mm-hmm. And it was all kind of very much laid out for me as far as, you know, almost in the style of a bulleted list as to here are the things that are available for you to do.
I said it was more like a video game.
Yeah, that's actually exactly...
It's very much like a video game. Honestly, though, 4th edition D&D is a lot like 1st edition Earthdawn as far as the way the game is built and structured and how things work in there. But yeah, it is. It's very video game-ish in that sense. And a lot of people do like it. I mean, it gets a very bad rap from your core D&D players. But
because it's like an MMO, like it's like a video game, specifically like an MMO, you have all your fantasy tropes. It is very, very simple to get a character out. You don't have to spend 2 hours making a character. And if you screw your character up, like you don't min-max it just right, well, it doesn't matter. The game's really loosey-goosey, yeah. You know? It's very hard to screw up. It's very easy to comprehend. And it does have rules, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like a whatever sort of system or a roll high. It has rules. Different dice do different things. Different abilities do different things. You have character classes that provide different roles. Again, there's going to be a lot of people like, oh my god, fourth edition, blah, 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 and then they choke on their own vomit.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, I get that, but you're an experienced gamer and this is not for you.
It's for somebody new.
It is great for somebody new.
Precisely, and the biggest concern with fourth edition is that it's so fixed or so railroady is that there's not going to be a lot of role playing or death, but that's up to the game master.
There's
nothing that stops you from doing it, but
maybe it would stop the issue I'm having.
That well, and well, yeah, that's what I wanted to get back to. Is let me steer us away from the edition wank.
Yeah.
We'll be following this up with an alignment wank. But let me getting back to the prior issue. I mean, Julia, if I was actually to offer some advice here. I'll go back to what I said a few edition lengths ago. I'm not sure you guys are playing the right game.
Yeah, I mean you're probably right. We just don't have the GMs that we have. I'm not going to GM. I just don't have time now that I have a kid. But they don't really want to pick some of the other stuff up that I think would be good.
And I think you're also maybe not having the right conversations. You got on the right track in regards to when you flipped out and went beast mode on everybody. But as if you were to have throttled back a little bit and, you know, had the conversation saying, look, you know, my character is built for this. Yours is not. This is an opportunity for me to do something. You're going to get your chance later to shine. There's a distribution, right. There's a spotlight distribution that has to happen, and you're stealing it from me. And it sounds selfish, but ultimately it's really not, because you're in essence standing up for your character and what your character is supposed to do at that particular mm-hmm. time.
I agree with
so
that.
You just need to talk.
I just
you
went
need
beast
to
mode.
Talk to your people. You did. You totally went beast mode, but that's okay. you're going to get forgiven for that, for the fact that, oh, yeah, she just had a baby, and then they won't take you seriously, and everyone's going to ignore you, and they'll talk behind your back, and then eventually you get kicked out of the group. I mean, that's kind of how these things go.
It's at my house. They can't kick me out.
Exactly.
They'll just have a different gaming night, and then suddenly stop not being able to make it to your place.
No, they weren't actually mad at me.
Julia. We can't do that night. We're all busy.
My brother actually sent me like a funny meme about it like the next day because I went beast mode. it was about like your character, all your players rolling the same skill as you. It was really funny.
No, that's,
yeah. Well, have you... Okay, apart from beast mode,
yeah,
have you had that conversation more productively of just saying, hey, you know, let me do what my character's supposed to do and I'll chill out when it's your time to shine?
In the past. And I think that's probably why I went beast mode, was a combination of having a baby and several years of this.
Blame the baby.
Hey, sleep deprivation. It's a real thing.
That first year is brutal.
No, but it was, I think like we've maybe not with this particular group, but maybe a few in the group, you know, we've had in trouble in the past where people really step on each other's toes. You know, you get it with the knowledge skills all the time. Like, I just feel like knowledge skills, like everybody's like, oh, I'll roll for that. And even if I don't have anything in it, it's like, no, you sit.
See, that's something that annoys me is the group is trying to figure something out, maybe investigate something or do something or whatever. And everyone, instead of saying, well, this person is an expert and so they're going to try it, or can we work together where this person work together to do something? Or, hey, maybe we just don't have that expertise here. We need to go talk to an NPC. No, everyone's like, well, according to the rules, even if I don't have a skill, I can roll the dice at a super bad modifier. So we have six people sitting around the table. Let's throw some fucking dice at this problem.
Yes.
Somebody's going to hit.
And here's the thing.
We'll do it once every 2 minutes. It'll be great.
There's the mechanic built in so you can assist. Right. So just let the person who actually has the skill roll the d20, and then you can get the assist modifier if you really want to be that involved, if you're that worried about reading a stupid book.
Yeah.
I know the
barbarians isn't interested.
Yeah, right. No, for some reason, they have knowledge like plus 20 for no reason, but I'm lying. But our GM in the knowledge skill department is good about keeping that in check.
I don't think this would help your group, but I know there are games that have I guess it's the inverse of an assist mechanic. We'll call it a meddling mechanic, where just as your success can benefit mine, so if you're good at it and I'm good at it, or you're mediocre and I'm good at it, then I could attempt it and you could assist. Mm-hmm. But conversely, if Pat and Chad say, well, screw it, we're just going to throw D20s at it because we can, that if they fail, they can actually drag the rolls down.
Oh, yeah. Man.
And so it's actually,
like that.
If like I'm trying to do emergency field surgery, I'm trying to do an appendectomy on somebody,
I reach in, hand you his gallbladder.
Yeah, exactly. Chad just reaches in there and starts twisting and turning things and whatever. His botch, it's not just I failed, no biggie, just pull the D20 off the table, but it actually drags, just as duly a success might bump me up, your guys' failures might drag me down. Mm-hmm. But I suppose it's not always plausible. I mean, if you're just sitting around brainstorming, does anyone know how to read this? I guess you could get somebody who misinterprets it or pretends they do when they don't.
Well, I think the misinterpreting thing is a perfect example of that. I mean, we've seen, let's say Recon. Everybody's quiet. Nobody's getting caught. We're being really careful. We're hedging our bets. It's long range. We have spy glasses and stuff. And everybody rolls sort of an investigation, spy, recon roll, or GM wants to see how to do it. Well, again, everyone's just throwing dice at the problem so that they can overcome the obstacle. Well, the GM has the tool where they can say, it's like, oh, yeah, man, 10,000 troops at this tiny guard post. It's amazing. It's the barbarian. Doesn't know how to count. He just counted the same guy 20 times.
He kept moving, around. He couldn't get him down.
Yeah, right. So he kept getting to the pinky and then losing count and starting back over.
Right.
Maybe he's not even clear on what the word 1,000 means.
No, but it sounds impressive.
Yeah.
And that's what barbarians do. Sound impressive. Mm-hmm. So he was there.
The other game system, I had a really hard time with this in the past, has been Shadowrun. I've had a lot of people who in Shadowrun tend to try to step on other people's toes. I think it's because you can, do so much in those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being a classless game like that, where you, as opposed to the game is totally classless. No, a game that does not have classes in it.
Shadowrun has classes. Does it not?
No.
Well it has suggestions, archetypes.
Oh, yeah, those are pre-built.
It does have suggested roles. You almost do have to sort of class down it. Mm. Like, if you want to be a rigger, it's really hard to be part rigger, part mage.
Gotcha. Yes.
You could do it,
but you're a crappy rigger and a crappy.
Bingo. Exactly. Yeah.
Which I think
Which I think is a really smart way of doing that, in my opinion, so you don't have people who are like, I can do everything.
But one thing it does, it does give you the opportunity to sort of invent roles, especially if you see one that's not well described. For example, I think one that's incredibly powerful in Shadowrun. Now, I don't know if they ever codified this in later editions, but at least as far as I played the game, which was up to third edition, they had not codified it into sort of an archetype, which was the contact person, where you don't necessarily have.
Fixer?
Not exactly. It's kind of like
face.
A fixer, but like you, because you could actually spend character creation points on knowing people. Mm. And so maybe, you've only got a bulletproof vest and a sidearm. You're not cyborged out. You don't know any magic. You don't have cars with armor and Gatling cannons on it, but you know everybody.
You know that guy.
If you get arrested by Lone Star, you know a sergeant who will spring you. If you end up out in the Barrens, you're technically an honorary member of a gang that will show up. If you end up out, you know, among the Native Americans or something, you know a chief out there. So, I mean, it's, and you can play somebody who is incredibly powerful that way.
I want to say there is a mechanic in that that's, oh, maybe I'm thinking of, Serenity has one where you, like, it's know that guy or something.
Well, and
like
it might also be in later editions. Once again, my intimate knowledge of Shadowrun only goes as far as third. I own fourth and fifth. Mm-hmm. But my,
I think really, fourth edition does.
Yeah, but I know there was a way that you could buy contacts at a certain level. And these are people that they'll help you out, but they're not really going to stick their necks out for you. And then it went up from there. You had, if you paid more, they would become a buddy. And if they, you paid more, they would become a genuine friend. And you could keep buying up their loyalty to higher and higher levels.
Just like real life.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think in a sense, because it represented your investment in these people.
Yeah.
I
mean, emotional investment.
Precisely. It's just the way that,
or monetary.
The way that they balanced it was in cash. And I guess you could say, well, you spent time hanging out the bar, getting to know people instead of putting in an extra shift. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's not spent on income. Maybe it's lost income. I mean, I don't know. But the point is, however you explained it, it did allow you to create these classes, so to speak, that the game had never really even specifically suggested. And yes, I think there was a contact fixer in the NPC list, but it was not one of the suggested archetypes for a player character to be.
Fascinating.
Fascinating.
Yep. Fascinating. Fascinating.
So, Julia, there's my advice to you is I think you guys are playing the wrong game. Yeah. If your people won't chill out, I think you need to find a game where you guys can play to your strengths more simultaneously, because I mean, it sounds to me like this person just doesn't want to be left sitting on the sidelines.
It's everybody,
you know what?
And so find a game where they aren't left sitting on the sidelines ever. That, you know, well, or at least not often. But there's, well,
or what you can do is you can talk to your game master and work out to where it's like, okay, so you have Grognak, the big booty barbarian orc chick.
Who is a lesbian, by the way?
Of course she is. Of course she is.
I don't know why. It's just,
well,
I,
you know, she, you was know, just born that way.
You know?
These, you know, played by a male, right?
No.
No?
No.
Hmm. Well, okay. Usually when there's a lesbian character, I can immediately go back to played by a male.
Yeah.
She's and she's a straight married woman.
Huh. Okay. Well, whatever. She wants to play lesbian. Okay.
Yeah, we'll allow this.
Yes. We will, from our judgment, we will allow this.
We will allow this one experiment.
We do have a female character being played by a male who's also a lesbian.
What you could do is you could work it out with the game master. Mm-hmm. And so when our big booty lesbian barbarian, half-orc, probably magic user, thief, whatever, goes out and is like, okay, well, I'm going to go do the recon. And you're just like, oh, that's my job. And then, oh, I'm going to do it. Let them.
Oh, yeah.
Let them.
That's true.
Fail.
That's true.
And then you rescue them.
Yeah.
And then or you can work it out with the game masters to where every little picadillo that each one has, they go and do it. And it's all above the board. It's all above board. All, you know, hey, if they roll the dice,
natural
and,
20
and boom, they got it. Hey, great. Well, but they're going to screw up eventually. And so each person has to dig them out of a hole one by one.
Right.
Or work it out with the game master to where if they're playing the unneeded tag along, failure doesn't affect everyone. So you've got the two sneaky characters creeping through and they both roll really well. And then you've got Big Booty creeping through, and Big Booty botches it. And what happens is you're successfully hidden, you know, behind the brush, and the other person's successfully hidden by the brush. But Big Booty's Big Booty, is
sticking it right out of the brush,
sticking right out, and
all ready for it.
Also, and all of a sudden, the enemy patrol only sees them,
the big giant
and
green ass,
calls them off.
Yep.
And
yeah, that's a good idea too.
What's that in that bush? It's a big giant green ass.
Let's get it.
Hell,
it's coming
right
for us.
Let's poke it.
All right.
So now we're talking
surprise
a pretty good
butt
game.
Sex.
Woo-hoo! So now I'm never failing a recon
sequel. Now we finally got something
to
talk
again.
About.
Surprise butt sex.
Yes.
So after their time off, I would like to thank Pat, Julia, and I guess the other guy
for
whatever.
Yeah. For joining us. As for the rest of you guys, have a great week and great games. And we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2017. Listeners are free to use this episode in any non-commercial endeavor so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the RPG Academy network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at therpgacademy.com/network.